From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 27th day of February 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Fake. She's from Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Barry Fisher from USDA will join us. He's a soil health specialist based out of Indianapolis. And then as we close out our time together, Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'll also tell you how to get your tickets, because you need to do it now, for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can buy them for just $30 at willag.org or by dialing 800-898-1065. Stay with us right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, no update of the numbers from the CME Group in Chicago today as I'm out of the office, but I do have this quick news note from USDA. Secretary Perdue has warned that there's a possibility of proposed cuts to the USDA's 2020 budget. Stephanie Ho has more.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue is warning of proposed cuts to USDA's 2020 budget.
See the budget come out pretty soon, and there will be a conservative budget. And we've done our best to advocate for farmers in that way, and we'll continue to do that way.
He was asked about recent comments by the OMB director that there would be across-the-board cuts of 5%.
Is it going to be more than 5%?
Yes.
At the same time, he gave few details of where he thinks the cuts will come.
I've encouraged the president of OMB to submit a budget that would be within the realm of negotiation there. Congress has gotten, not just in this administration, but previously, I think, to just totally disregard it.
He added that he does not want to get ahead of the president on budget matters.
I don't feel that wrong about you all asking and trying to get that out, but the budget will be out when it's out, and you'll be able to see all those stories.
Secretary Perdue spoke on the sidelines of a national meeting of the School Nutrition Association. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
We'll have more news from Washington as we make our way through the rest of the week. Just a quick reminder that you should pick up those tickets to the All-Day Agricultural Outlook. Do that right now today. Remember, we'll have more than a dozen analysts there, including Eric Snodgrass, Matt Bennett, Aaron Curtis, Brian Stark, Chuck Shelby, Murray Wise, Alan Dearden, Bill Gentry, Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, Jackie Vakes, Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Mike Zuzulob, and Todd Hubbs. You can buy your tickets online at willag.org. That's willag.org, or at 800-898-1065. The All-Day Ag Outlook is next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from Andrew Pritchard. For today, mostly cloudy, a high of 39 degrees, a northwest wind at 5 to 15. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 19. Northwest winds at 5 to 10, and tomorrow mostly cloudy, a high of 32. Northeast winds at 5. Tomorrow evening partly cloudy and 23 degrees. Northeast winds at 5 miles an hour. And for Friday, mostly sunny, a high of 40 degrees. A southeast wind on Friday at 5 miles an hour. The extended forecast from the National Weather Service says into Friday night, we'll have mostly cloudy skies, a low of 26, light and variable winds. They'll turn to the northwest at 5 to 8 after midnight and bring us a chance of rain by Saturday morning. Maybe some snow between noon and 5. A chance of snow after 5 Saturday evening. Mostly cloudy. A high of 35 degrees for the day. North-northwest winds at about 8 to 13, gusting to 18. Chance of precipitation during the day on Saturday is set at 30%. And then Saturday night, mostly cloudy. A low of just 15 degrees. A chance of some snow on Sunday. It'll be partly sunny. And we'll go to a high of 24. And then Sunday night, a low of 5 degrees. Mostly sunny on Monday. And a high of 19 degrees.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's at Stuart Peterson. And Jackie, thanks so much for being with us. I am so looking forward to having you along with, well, you know, 11 other grain analysts over at the Beef House next Tuesday. And folks can join us. I hope they'll dial willag.org on their websites or 800-898-1065 to pick up their tickets today. Boy, it's going to be fun. I this is just a good year. There's so much going on, Jackie, to talk about. I'm really looking forward to having you there.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to being there. It's been a long time.
Yep. So let's get started with some of this. I want to go back because we have done the numbers, but I want to go back and review some of the ag form figures. Have you gone through them?
I have, and you know the forum was last Thursday and Friday, and I usually used to attend it, which is something I really, really miss a lot, and I hope to be able to go back next year. But you know, because it gives us our first look at acreage, you know, and ag economics for 2019, you know, and it's always presented by Robert Johansson, you know, the USDA chief economist. And so I highlighted some things, Todd, that I think are important for people to think about. And this is something, honestly, that I haven't thought about. He pointed out that the U.S. produced the most corn and beans in the world in 2018, slightly more than 30% of world production. I was shocked. I did not expect that to be the case. Wheat acres in 2019, he said, are expected to be the smallest in 110 years. China is now ranked fifth as the share of total exports for 2019. You know, in 2016, they were ranked number one. And, of course, we all know that that is in relationship to the trade wars. Average price for corn is expected to be $3.65 for cash. That's up 1.4%. And for beans, it's $8.80, which is up 20 cents or 2.3%. And I think you have a lot of people who were surprised by that. But, you know, that's after they lost 73 cents the year before. So it's not like it's a huge move, but at least it's a positive move. And, you know, when I look at the acreage, Todd, you know, corn acres came in at 92 million, up 3.3. Soybeans, 85 million, down 4.7. Wheat, 47, like I said, the smallest number in 110 years, down 1.7. Cotton came in at 14.3. That was up 1.1. And then rice came in at 2.7, down 9.8. You know, and when you look at those numbers, Todd, I'm not so sure that they're just the basic start numbers, let's put it that way, because I would have expected to see cotton acres up a little bit more. And yet, you know, with cotton acres being up more, that is a direct replacement for beans. And so that isn't the big surprise, but it's not enough to make a drop of 4.7 acres or 4.7%. And, you know, rice being down 9.8% there too is something that it just doesn't add up. And we never, ever at the USDA forum get all of the expected acreage. And I think one of the things that is riding in the background is this USMCA, you know, United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. You know, Sonny Perdue was there, U.S. Secretary of Ag, and his counterparts from Mexico and Canada. And they tried to pin them down at the forum as to, you know, what timeline there was for finalizing the agreement. And the only thing they could agree about was they couldn't give you a timeline. and so I thought that was interesting. I'll finish up on the forum, noting some of the things that Mr. Johansson said. You know, he noted that there are a lot of uncertainties this year, you know, that have a direct impact on the outlook for crops, livestock, and dairy. And a quote from him was, questions about policy, trade, weather, and market information all are having an impact, making the outlook less certain than perhaps any time since the first year of the Freedom to Farm Act in 1996. And I'll tell you, I remember that year well, and it was a tough one because, you know, you just didn't know what was going to happen. So I think it's interesting.
One other note out of the Ag Forum, and maybe you have something to relate to this, because I think it is unusual that they included some slides about foreclosures in the Midwest. Anything else on that point?
Right. Well, you know, it's the trade war, you know, between Washington and Beijing is, you know, certainly had a big impact out in the country. And, you know, you look at some of these numbers, acreage numbers, and I think that they highlight that. You know, we've still got low demand from China, which is, you know, it's causing a big oversupply problem. And, you know, it has been a major headache for the majority of our farmers. And yet at the same time, you know, producing the most in the world didn't help us last year either. When you look at the stocks rising the way they had, you know, they estimated that this has taken a $7.9 billion loss by the U.S. farmer in the past year. And that's really a tough situation. But, you know, the Department of Ag says, well, we've paid out $7.7 billion. That still leaves, you know, $200 million behind to try and help. And the Trump administration is pledging $12 billion in aid. But, you know, you're just really not sure if that's going to come in time to save some people. And, you know, Todd, we're seeing some really unusual circumstances this year, and we're actually seeing liens coming in against crop insurance. I'll tell you, I've been doing this for a long time, and that is not something that you heard of very often. And this is a lot more widespread than I anticipated. And, you know, what it says to me is that we've got farms out there that just can't get traditional planting loans. And so the seed and fertilizer companies are, you know, bankrolling them basically on inputs and then using these liens to guarantee that they get payment. That's a scary situation. You know, you look at crop insurance, you know, crop insurance should be there to, you know, protect your income, protect against, you know, disasters. But wow, to use it as collateral to be able to get input loans it shakes me up. I can tell you that much.
Hey, what are you thinking about acreage shifts, if any, this year?
Well, in all honesty, I don't believe we're going to see any huge shifts in the three I's, or very little if it does happen. And you know, it only makes sense because it's due to the fact that we have better basis and we have better access to markets. Now, I am hearing about quite a bit of switching from beans to corn in Nebraska and some of the other, you know, the upper Midwest states. And that's just, you know, due to the potential insurance price that we're looking at and yield potential. You know, when you look at corn, corn's potential to yield a great deal more is better than beans. And so, you know, we have to ask ourselves, a lot of people are talking more beans due to the banks not giving money, you know, but that's kind of countered by this crop insurance liens. It's something I hadn't really been thinking about. So, you know, will they use it to actually plant beans or will they use it to plant corn? You know, none of us are going to know that until we get actually to the March acreage report.
A couple of other items, inspections this week.
Yep. Well, we've got wheat sales. You know, our wheat inspections running 1% ahead of a year ago. Sales are 1% ahead. Shipments are 10% behind. And the USDA is saying about 11% increase on the year. So everything's upside down on that side. Corn sales are 2% ahead for the year. Shipments are up 50%. And the USDA has been forecasting a 1% increase on the year. We have a lot of crop year to go yet, but U.S. soybean sales running 17% behind a year ago, which is not anywhere near as much as you would think it would be. Shipments are 36% behind, and the USDA is forecasting a 12% decline on the year. When we look at crushings, that's one thing I wanted to look at and see what is happening on the ethanol side. Corn crushed for ethanol was at 460.5 million bushels. Now, that was up from last month, which was 454.5. But a year ago, we had crushed 487.7. And, you know, that the ethanol industry is another area that's not having the easiest of times.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. And sure looking forward to having you here in the state of Illinois, well, Indiana, at the All Day Ag Outlook.
You bet.
Hey, that's Jackie Vake. She is with Stuart Peterson, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. Now, if you'd like to join us over at the Beef House next Tuesday, still plenty of time, but you need to get your tickets right now. You can do that online at willag.org, willag.org. Just go online, scroll down till you see the big words that say buy your tickets here, and click on that. And then you can buy them right there online, or you can dial up this number, 800-898-1065. Let me repeat that for you, 800-898-1065. Make sure you buy those tickets right now. Don't wait. Do it today. Boy, we've been talking a lot this week about cover crops, and I have one more interview for you from last week's Cover Crop Council meeting that took place in Springfield, Illinois. USDA Soil Health Specialist Barry Fisher was there. He had two primary things he wanted to leave with farmers that were in attendance.
Basically, laying out some foundational principles to improve soil health and to improve soil function. And then followed up with that is basically management principles that help producers trying to improve soil health and soil function from a management standpoint. What are some baselines that they need to start from?
So start with the foundational principles. What might they be?
Well, from a soil health standpoint, if we look across all agriculture enterprises, we find that if we can reduce the soil disturbance, if we can keep the soil covered, if we can add some diversity of plant life, that gives us diverse food sources for the organisms in the soil. And then if we can find a way, since we're feeding the organisms in the soil from the plants, then we need those plants growing. We need living roots longer than just our summertime crops. So therein lies, that's why cover crops fit into a lot of those four key principles. Cover crops play a good role.
And so what kinds of things would they promote in the soil itself?
Well, the cover crop, because it has the ability after the rest of our crops senesce and go into dormancy and get harvested, there's still a lot of days of sunlight left, of free sunlight energy, that cover crop can grab that sunlight energy, grabs carbon out of the atmosphere, build sugars, build proteins, build food essentially, and those actually come out the roots. Those are come out as exudates into the root, into the soil. And that's the food stuff for many of the really important organisms, the mycorrhizal fungi, the important bacteria, there's even beneficial nematodes. There's a lot of living things in the soil that really help us provide pore space and nutrient cycling in our soil. So if we can feed those organisms using that free sunlight energy that we otherwise are not capturing in the late fall, and into the earlier spring before we plant, those we've got those two windows that gives us a lot of extra feeding potential for the beneficial organisms in the soil.
So the living earth then gives back to the crop the next season?
Sure, it's all part of nutrient cycling. It keeps all of our nutrients, that's what a lot of our conference is about, keep the nutrients on the land, keep them in play. If we can keep those nutrients when the crops aren't using it, if they can be assimilated into other living things that are going to cycle them back to the crop the next year, then that's a win for everybody. While those organisms are living and assimilating those nutrients, keeping those nutrients on the farm, they're also moving around in the soil. They're producing glues that aggregate the soil, that provide pore space, that allows better infiltration, that allows better water holding capacity of the soil, and more plant available water and more plant available nutrients for a longer period of time into the summer. So it's all about improving real soil function. You know, when we talk about soil health, it's not just something to make us feel good. We're talking about real improvements to soil functions that relate immediately back to productivity potential, resilience during tough weather times, and major economic efficiencies in our agricultural systems.
What are the management practices that you talk about?
Well, when we talk about management, we want to reduce tillage. Okay, if we can reduce the tillage, either adopt some strip till or no till, that takes a lot of the disturbance, the physical disturbance, out of the soil. Okay, and then we look at nutrient management. We time it. We place nutrients less, more of a spoon feeding process. That actually takes some of the chemical disturbance shock out of the system. When we put a whole bunch of nutrients at one time, that's kind of a shock to the system. So that's a management practice that's actually beneficial. If we spread that application out in a more timely fashion, it's actually beneficial to the organisms too and the soil function. But then we talk about adding the cover crops, managing that cover crop. And we may manage a different cover crop differently depending on what's the next crop in our crop rotation. So understanding of conservation crop rotation is also a practice. I mean, and so we talk about those type things all bundling into a management system that those practices then are working synergistically toward an overall benefit to the soil function and soil health.
When you talk about the nutrients that are applied, generally speaking, the source of N would be the primary and largest applications that are made. Are you concerned about the other nutrients, and how do you deal with N and spreading that out over a larger time frame?
Well, certainly N, but phosphorus is a big one too for us, see? So as we look at this system, one thing that we do know is as we increase the ecosystem, increase the biological populations in the soil, there's natural enzymes that are produced that actually release more phosphorus from the soil, the mineral part of the soil. It detaches it, makes it more plant available. So we have to look at that and then decide, okay, should we alter our phosphorus management to this, to match this system and the timing of its release? So, you know, we start changing, you know, our nutrient management plan. We still focus on the four R's, but those four R's may change as we change the carbon cycle and change the you know, some of those. Nitrogen the same way. If we can get a nitrogen management so that when we're spoon feeding and we get those organisms in the soil, you know, bacteria is very high in nitrogen. You know, so we've got a good bacteria cycling and some of the organisms that are in there cycling, they're making a more stabilized source of nitrogen in the soil, that it actually gets released in the summertime during maximum uptake. So it provides kind of a good nutrient and nitrogen management tool, just the biology itself does, if we know how to manage that.
One final question. The four R's stand for what?
Right rate, right time, right source, and right place.
Thanks so much, Barry.
All right, thanks.
Barry Fisher is a soil health specialist with the United States Department of Agriculture. He's based in Indiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. Next week on Tuesday, I hope you'll join me along with a dozen grain analysts over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, to talk about the price of corn, soybeans, wheat, livestock, China, what's happening in Brazil, the weather forecast. We'll do that with Eric Stondgrass, the price of farmland. Murray Wise will be there. And you can, too. All you have to do is go online right now and buy that ticket. It's just $30 at willag.org, willag.org. It's quick and easy to do. And you can join us at 8 a.m. on Tuesday, March the 5th at the Beef House. We'll go to just past the noon hour, and we'll feed you not once but twice. Really, you'll get a Beef House coffee and roll in the morning, and then a Beef House lunch at the noon hour. Yeah, that's included in the $30. And we'll also have Matt Bennett, Aaron Curtis, Brian Stark, Chuck Shelby, Alan Dearden, Bill Gentry, Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, Jackie Vakes, Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Mike Zuzlo, and Todd Hubbs on hand. You can ask them questions. There'll be a whole bunch of folks in booths around the outside of the space. If you've not been to the Beef House All Day Ag Outlook, sponsored by WILL, and it's 29 years, this is the year to go. Come join us. You can do it right now. willag.org, just $30 or 800-898-1065.
On this day in agricultural history in 1841, Henry W. Longfellow published his famous poem, The Village Blacksmith. The smith, a mighty man is he, with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are as strong as iron bands. In 1879, saccharin, an artificial sweetener, was discovered by Constantine Fahlberg and Ira Remsen at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. They discovered saccharin while working on coal tar derivatives. Saccharin is 300 times sweeter than sugar, and for years was found in products as varied as toothpaste, diet soft drinks, ice cream, beauty products, and pharmaceuticals. In 1936, on this date, Ivan Petrovich Pavlov died. Pavlov's work with dogs actually started as a study of digestion. He theorized that digestion was controlled in part by sensory inputs of sight, smell, and taste. Of course, he's best known for his work on conditioned reflex, and he did more than ring a bell. He also experimented with whistles, metronomes, gunshots, and tuning forks. And in 2001, a new outbreak of foot and mouth disease swept across a cattle and sheep farm in Devon, England, raising the fear that the disease had reached mainland Europe. The outbreak of 450 cattle, 1,300 pigs, and 250 sheep vindicated an EU decision to stop all animal movement. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at the weather forecast. Let's start in the Midwest, where we've had an awful lot of cold and an awful lot of snow, and people sure would like some relief. Is there any in the offing in the near term?
Well, I think we have to go out another full week and probably 10 days before we can expect to see something a little bit more reasonable. The temperatures are going to plummet this weekend and continue quite cold into next week, and temperatures will be way below average. We'll probably have low temperatures near or slightly below zero as far south as northern Missouri and central Illinois. So it will get real nasty cold. We'll see freezes down into the Delta and in the interior parts of the southeastern states during the early to middle part of next week. That is likely to burn back a little bit of this new wheat development that has occurred recently, although there will be no permanent losses. And there's some flowering fruit trees that are being reported from Texas into Georgia and parts of the Carolinas right now. So that could be an issue with some of our fresh fruit a little bit later this year. We may have a smaller crop because of the frost and freezes that will come in while those trees are flowering. There is a chance for snow and some rain as the coldest air comes into the region. Otherwise, we'll have some brief periods of light precipitation over the next couple of days. But the greatest snow event is probably going to be in the eastern parts of the Midwest, and that will occur Friday night into Saturday, just ahead of the coldest conditions. And there may also be another bout of snow that comes out of Kansas and moves to the areas near and south of the Ohio River into the northern Delta and parts of the Tennessee Basin area as we finish out the week again. So winter is definitely not over for a while.
Last week as we talked, you were worried, and I think many others, that we were having enough snow that the pattern appeared to be wet and that it could, even though we're still very early, push the beginning of the growing season back. Is that still the case in the United States?
Yeah, I am very concerned about that. After we get done with this cold bout, we will bring warmer air back across the country, and that overrunning warm, moist air from the Gulf of Mexico into the cold air mass will certainly set the stage for a couple of strong storms. We'll also have some storms hitting California next week while the rest of us are cold and dry. So those storms in California will work their way eastward at about the same time we open the Gulf of Mexico up. So there will be more storms coming up and more wet weather. And the pattern is still suggested to continue like that, frequent storms coming on through March and into April. So, yeah, I do believe that more flooding and more delays in early season farming activity are quite probable.
A quick word about South America.
Everything looks pretty good at the moment. We're certainly way beyond the problems that we had in January. Brazil is seeing a good mix of rain and sunshine. That will continue for a while. There's a couple of pockets there that need some attention, but it's no big deal. And Argentina, there's some pockets there also that are a little dry in southern Cordoba and down into parts of southwestern Buenos Aires and La Pampa. But for the most part, Argentina is looking very good still.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from Busey. With 150 years of agribusiness expertise, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.